Monthly Notices of the RAS, 8-132. Remarkable appearances during the total eclipse of the Moon on March 19, 1848. In an extract from a letter from Mr. Forster, of Bruges, it is said that, according to the writer's observations at the time of the predicted total eclipse, the Moon shone with about 3 times the intensity of the mean illumination of an eclipsed lunar disk, that the British consul, at Ghent, who did not know of the predicted eclipse, had written inquiring as to the blood-red color of the Moon. This is not very satisfactory to what used to be our malices. But there follows another letter, from another astronomer, Walkie, who had made observations at CLYSTST. Lawrence, that, instead of an eclipse, the Moon became as is printed in italics most beautifully illuminated. Rather tinged with a deep red. The Moon being as perfect with light as if there had been no eclipse whatever. I note that Chambers, in his work upon eclipses, gives Forster's letter in full and not a mention of Walkie's letter. There is no attempt in monthly notices to explain upon the notion of greater distance of the Moon, and the Earth's shadow falling short, which would make as much trouble for astronomers, if that were not foreseen, as no eclipse at all. Also there is no refuge in saying that virtually never, even in total eclipses, is the Moon totally dark as perfect with light as if there had been no eclipse whatever. It is said that at the time there had been an aurora borealis, which might have caused the luminosity, without a datum that such an effect, by an aurora, had ever been observed upon the Moon. But single instances show an observation by Scott, in the Antarctic. The force of this datum lies in my own acceptance, based upon especially looking up this point, that an eclipse 9/10 of totality has great effect, even though the sky be clouded. Scott, Voyage of the Discovery, Volume 2, p. 215. There may have been an eclipse of the Sun, September 21, 1903, as the almanac said, but we should, none of us, have liked to swear to the fact. This eclipse had been set down at 9/10 of totality. The sky was overcast at the time. So it is not only that many eclipses unrecognized by astronomers as eclipses have occurred, but that intermediatism, or impositivism, breaks into their own seemingly regularized eclipses. Our data of unregularized eclipses, as profound as those that are conventionally or officially recognized, that have occurred relatively to this Earth. In notes and queries there are several allusions to intense darknesses that have occurred upon this Earth, quite as eclipses occur, but that are not referable to any known eclipsing body. Of course there is no suggestion here that these darknesses may have been eclipses. My own acceptance is that if in the 19th century anyone had uttered such a thought as that, he'd have felt the blight of a dominant, that materialistic science was a jealous god, excluding, as works of the devil, all utterances against the seemingly uniform, regular, periodic, that to defy him would have brought on withering by ridicule, shrinking away by publishers' contempt of friends and family, justifiable grounds for divorce that one who would so defy would feel what unbelievers in relics of saints felt in an earlier age, what befell virgins who forgot to keep fires burning, in a still earlier age, but that, if he'd almost absolutely hold out, just the same new fixed star reported in monthly notices. Altogether, the point in positivism here is that by dominance and their correlates, quasi-existence strives for the positive state, aggregating, around a nucleus, or dominant, systematized members of a religion, a science, a society, but that individuals who do not surrender and submerge may of themselves highly approximate to positiveness the fixed, the real, the absolute. In Notes and Queries, 2-4-139, there is an account of a darkness in Holland, in the midst of a bright day, so intense and terrifying that many panic-stricken persons lost their lives stumbling into the canals. Gentleman's Magazine, 33-414. A darkness that came upon London, August 19, 1763, greater than at the great eclipse of 1748. However, our preference is not to go so far back for data. For a list of historic dark days, see Humboldt, Cosmos, 1-120. Monthly Weather Review, March, 1886-79. That, according to the La Crosse Daily Republican, of March 20, 1886, darkness suddenly settled upon the city of Oshkosh, Wisconsin, at 3 p.m., March 19. In 5 minutes the darkness equaled that of midnight. Consternation. I think that some of us are likely to overdo our own superiority and the absurd fears of the Middle Ages. Oshkosh. People in the streets rushing in all directions, horses running away, women and children running into cellars. Little modern touch after all, gas meters instead of images and relics of saints. This darkness, which lasted from 8 to 10 minutes, occurred in a day that had been light but cloudy. It passed from west to east, and brightness followed. Then came reports from towns to the west of Oshkosh, that the same phenomenon had already occurred there. A wave of total darkness had passed from west to east. Other instances are recorded in the Monthly Weather Review, but, as to all of them, we have a sense of being pretty well eclipsed, ourselves, by the conventional explanation that the obscuring body was only a very dense mass of clouds. But some of the instances are interesting. Intense darkness at Memphis, Tennessee, for about 15 minutes, at 10 a.m., December 2, 1904. We are told that in some quarters a panic prevailed, and that some were shouting and praying and imagining that the end of the world had come. MWR, 32-522. At Louisville, Kentucky, March 7, 1911, at about 8 a.m., duration about half an hour, had been raining moderately, and then hail had fallen. The intense blackness and general ominous appearance of the storm spread terror throughout the city. MWR 39-345. However, this merger between possible eclipses by unknown dark bodies and commonplace terrestrial phenomena is formidable. As to darknesses that have fallen upon vast areas, conventionality is smoke from forest fires. In the U.S. Forest Service Bulletin, number 117, F.G. Plummer gives a list of 18 darknesses that have occurred in the United States and Canada. He is one of the primitives, but I should say that his dogmatism is shaken by vibrations from the new dominant. His difficulty, which he acknowledges, but which he would have disregarded had he written a decade or so earlier, is the profundity of some of these obscurations. He says that mere smokiness cannot account for such awe-inspiring dark days. So he conceives of eddies in the air, concentrating the smoke from forest fires. Then, in the inconsistency or discord of all quasi-intellection that is striving for consistency or harmony, he tells of the vastness of some of these darknesses. Of course, Mr. Plummer did not really think upon this subject, but one does feel that he might have approximated higher to real thinking than by speaking of concentration and then listing data of enormous area, or the opposite of circumstances of concentration, because, of his 19 instances, 9 are set down as covering all New England. In quasi-existence, everything generates or is part of its own opposite. Every attempt at peace prepares the way for war, all attempts at justice result in injustice in some other respect, so Mr. Plummer's attempt to bring order into his data, with the explanation of darkness caused by smoke from forest fires, results in such confusion that he ends up by saying that these daytime darknesses have occurred often with little or no turbidity of the air near the Earth's surface or with no evidence at all of smoke except that there is almost always a forest fire somewhere. However, of the 18 instances, the only one that I'd bother to contest is the profound darkness in Canada and northern parts of the United States, November 19, 1819, which we have already considered. Its concomitants. Lights in the sky. Fall of a black substance. Shocks like those of an earthquake. In this instance, the only available forest fire was one to the south of the Ohio River. For all I know, soot from a very great fire south of the Ohio might fall in Montreal, Canada, and conceivably, by some freak of reflection, light from it might be seen in Montreal, but the earthquake is not assimilable with a forest fire. On the other hand, it will soon be our expression that profound darkness, fall of matter from the sky, lights in the sky, and earthquakes are phenomena of the near approach of other worlds to this world. It is such comprehensiveness, as contrasted with inclusion of a few factors and disregard for the rest, that we call higher approximation to realness or universalness. A Darkness, of April 17, 1904, at Wimbledon, England, Simons Med. Mag. 39-69. It came from a smokeless region, no rain, no thunder, lasted 10 minutes, too dark to go even out in the open. As to darknesses in Great Britain, one thinks of fogs, but in Nature, 25-289, there are some observations by Major J. Herschel, upon an obscuration in London, January 22, 1882, at 10:30 a.m., so great that he could hear persons upon the opposite side of the street, but could not see them. It was obvious that there was no fog to speak of. Annual Register, 1857-132. An account by Charles A. Murray, British envoy to Persia, of a darkness of May 20, 1857, that came upon Baghdad, a darkness more intense than ordinary midnight, when neither stars nor moon are visible. After a short time the black darkness was succeeded by a red, lurid gloom, such as I never saw in any part of the world. Panic seized the whole city.